Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. I'm delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of Half Price Books, because Half Price Weekend Books, all size weekend, Half Price Books. Mark Maxwell, I'm gazing at you. That's why I got thrown a little bit. This is All Sides Weekend Books. We are going to talk about what our panel is reading, what you are reading. I'm going to be asking you out there for recommendations. We have some for you as well. And without further ado, let me actually introduce the panel. Mark Maxwell is a manager of Half Price Books. You've all been to Half Price Books, although the one near me just shut down, I might add, up near Graceland.
Yes.
What was that about?
Well, we did close our store on North High Street. That particular location wasn't terribly successful.
Bring it back. All
right. You're not the first one to tell us that. I'll point out that we have four other stores within 10 miles of that location.
And they're all wonderful. Thank you, Mark Maxwell, for being here. Robin Nesbitt is a manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. She comes to us with the library's Quick Picks. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you for being here.
Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and her blog, which is indispensable to anyone who loves books, is thelongestchapter.com. And Cassie Rose, you were talking a little bit off mic about a couple of books that you, first of all, you're making an appearance at Gramercy Books in Bexley. Let's talk about that for a minute first.
Yes, that's coming up in June on Tuesday night, June 27th. So it's an hour, and I'm going to be leading a discussion about the Elizabeth Strout new novel, Anything is Possible. And I would love for everyone to come, whether you are an Elizabeth Strout fan or whether you're not, whether you want to learn about Elizabeth Strout. We definitely want to talk about this book and how Anything is Possible and how it relates to her previous book, Lucy Barton. And I think it'll be a great discussion, because there's so much about Elizabeth Strout that she brings to her stories and her novels about class and privilege, about what it's like to grow up in poverty and then to be successful, about a lot of things that are internal in a struggle of childhood and relationship with parents. So it's going to be a great discussion. I would love to hear people to come and hear their views of the book.
Elizabeth Strout, a couple of her novels, I believe, were set in New England. I'm thinking of Olive Kittredge, if that's the same author.
Yes, and Lucy Barton is in New York City. And
this is almost a continuation of Lucy Barton.
It is. Yeah. But it's okay. If you haven't read Lucy Barton, you can still read this novel. And I actually think it might be even better if you read this novel and then read Lucy Barton. Mm. The only thing is that it covers the characters that she wrote about in Lucy Barton in her small town in Amgash, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but Illinois. And where Lucy Barton comes in here is that she's written a memoir about her growing up in this town. So in all of the stories, people are running into the book at the bookstore, or someone's reading it and they're having reactions to it. But it's a very small part of all of the stories. So what she brings out more is the people that she and her mother were talking about in the hospital room at Lucy Barton.
You've discussed Elizabeth Strout before, and she's very much in the news. That book was just given a rave in the New York Times Book Review. What is it about this writer specifically that really attracts you?
For me, it's how she is able to capture an inner world of a character and what it's like to have you could say the secret feelings, the things that you don't share with other people that are either hard for you or make you feel different or make you feel ashamed or happy, maybe the things that you hold on to in life. And she brings that out brilliantly without going into a lot of discussion and description. She captures the characters, who they are in the small town. And in Lucy Barton, certainly Lucy Barton, in this hospital room where she was struggling with an illness and her relationship with her mother, it's not obvious. That's the thing. She doesn't come out obviously in the words to say this is what it is, but you feel it by the way that she captures it. And she has, it's a unique style. And it's almost like, I was thinking about it as I was coming to the station today, it's almost like a drug that where you read her prose and you get lost in it, in this world that she creates of these people, and you can't forget them. You go on thinking about them and why they have made the choices that they make.
That, I think, is the mark of a great writer, if they take you out of yourself and put you right into the world that they're creating. This is the 25th of June, 27th of June. 20, write that down. 27th of June at Gramercy Books. Cassie Rose is leading a discussion on the new novel by Elizabeth Strout called Anything is Possible. Mark Maxwell is the manager. I'm going to say the manager. I don't care if I get in trouble.
We'll allow it.
Half Price Books, which is a very popular destination for book lovers all through our listening area, no matter where you happen to be. You also tend to bring up big stacks of really eclectic books, and that's why I always look forward to having you here. So hit me. Dazzle me.
All right. I brought a book that booksellers are pretty excited about right now. It's just out on Tuesday. It is a true crime book called The Fact of a Body by Alexandria Marzano-Lesnovich. True crime is a very popular genre. It's not normally my cup of tea, but I heard a little about this one, and I was intrigued, so I picked it up. So the author was, in 2003, the author was a first-year student in Harvard Law School. She took a summer internship working for an organization that fights the death penalty. They do appeals for death row inmates. So she traveled to Louisiana, where she was assigned a particular case. It was a guy named Ricky who had 10 years before committed a terrible crime. He had murdered a child. So on the first day of her internship, one of the lawyers shows her a videotape that is the murderer's taped confession. And she immediately is seized by an inexplicable hatred for the man that she sees on the videotape. And even though she's ostensibly there to save him from the death penalty, she knows that what she wants more than anything else is to see him die. So in order to explain that to herself, she goes back to her own past. She has a fascinating family history. The story unfolds as an alternating true crime book and memoir of the author's family in alternating chapters. And so each story informs the other, and they tend to kind of bleed into each other. So she realizes at some point that as she's reading the transcripts of this trial, that she's filling in details with details from her own life. And so she learns to understand the things that happened to her as a child by studying the case.
Don't give it away, but that's very interesting, the premise. And I wonder how often that happens when someone is called in to defend somebody accused of a loathsome, mm-hmm. horrible crime. And really, you know, how can you not get involved with that emotionally? Right.
And this is a book about the shadow that those kinds of crimes cast, not just on the perpetrator and the victim, but on everyone who's touched by them, sometimes for generations.
It's called The Fact of a Body. It's a nonfiction book. It's a true crime book. When did the buzz on this begin? You said the book world is talking about it. Where did it come from?
A lot of independent booksellers have picked up this book. It's the author's first novel. One wonders.
It's a novel?
Her first book. Right. One wonders what her second book will be because she's obviously put a lot into this one. But I think that it may be up for some awards this year. It is something that we expect to hear more about as the year goes
what
on.
What about the writing specifically grabbed you, about the writing of the book?
Well, most true crime books tend to be written in a fairly matter-of-fact way. This one has a little bit more literary punch to it.
The Fact of a Body, the author again is?
Alexandria Marzano-Lesnovich.
At least the title's easy to remember, The Fact of a Body.
The Fact of a Body,
Mark
correct.
Thank you, Maxwell, very much. Robin Nesbitt from the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library comes to us with Quick Picks. Real fast, what are Quick Picks?
Quick Picks are books that are on the bestseller list, but you can't reserve them. So you walk in, take your chances, you can check them out for 21 days, you can't renew them. But it's one of those things where you walk in and you kind of get lucky. You're like, oh, I've been waiting on that book, and boom, there it is. For you.
You tend to buy big stacks of them.
Big stacks, right. Yeah, exactly. Right.
You have fiction and nonfiction books.
That's correct. And kids' stuff, too.
And kids' stuff. Yeah. Young reader books are very popular, becoming popular for adults, too.
Yes. Yeah. Teen novels as well as – and when we do Quick Picks, I'm not only teen, but like Diary of a Wimpy Kid, for example.
The last two times you were here, you had a library top reserve, and I'm going to ask you again. I'll bet it's still at least in the top 10, Orwell's 1984. How are we doing with that?
I checked the other day because I thought he's going to ask me about this, and it's still checking out pretty well. the reserve list has calmed down. The reserve list has picked up on another one, which is The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yes.
So this is a quick pick, and this is a quick pick for a number of reasons. It's a great book, but Hulu has just made it into a well-received, a critically acclaimed TV series, which I don't get Hulu, but I think I'm going to go back and reread this because I read this so long ago that I don't really remember it, but it's got a great new cover, too.
It is, tell us about The Handmaid's Tale, Margaret Atwood.
Yeah, so The Handmaid's Tale is about basically women's, all their rights get taken away.
Women's rights.
Rights. You know, the thing that's that I, when I read it, I thought about the fact that they take, because all of everybody's money has been put onto cards, and they take all the women's money away, because it's not, there's no cash in the society anymore. And I think about that as we move to a more cashless society, it starts creeping me out. But they have women that basically are breeders. There's a new social order, you know, and so and she wrote this. Oh my goodness,
it's
she wrote
about 25 years old.
She wrote this a long time ago, and it feels 1986, wow. And it feels pretty prescient, you know, considering
I bet
what's going
writing
on.
It 1984, too.
Right?
Yeah,
exactly.
She did. Yeah.
The main handmaid's name is Offred, and she's the one who, you know, just kind of comments and knows, you know, things aren't right, you know. But basically, women are subjugated to basically become wives, breeders, or pleasure. So, grim, depressing, dystopian, you know, it's got everything, right?
It's kind of the world we live in for some of us,
exactly.
Anyway. But that is part of the quick picks at the Columbus Library.
And real quick, the one that Cassie's talking about on June 27th is also a quick pick. So Elizabeth Strauss, Anything Is Possible is also a quick pick at the library.
Have you read that?
I was just bemoaning the fact that I have never read Elizabeth Strauss. So I am now making a vow to get this book read before we talk again the next
time. If it's the same author, there's a book, a novel of hers set in Maine, where two young boys commit a hate crime. It's very, very compelling.
The Burgess Boys?
Yes, it's the Burgess Boys. That's a wonderful novel. Yeah.
Okay.
So when I come on the 27th of June, I'm going to bring my copy of the Burgess Boys and we'll talk about that as well. I'm Christopher Purdy. We are talking about books today on today's edition of All Sides Weekend, and we'd like to hear from you. Let us know what you're reading, or you can ask our panel for a recommendation. They'll be talking a lot more about books once I shut up. The number here is 614-292-8513. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. We'll take a quick break and come on back. Don't go away. We are back. You're listening to All Sides Weekend Books with Mark Maxwell, who's a manager at Half Price Books. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and Robin Nesbitt comes to us from the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Libraries with quick picks. And now, in fairness, we've had three rather heavy books we've talked about, The End of the World, The Fact of a Body, etc. And I'm just wondering if anybody has a book that's a little bit up. Cassie Rose, do you have an up book for us?
I do have an up book. It's a new one. It's a debut novel, and I think it just came out this week. It's called Chemistry. I can't pronounce her first name. I'll say it's by Ms. Wang, W-E-I-K-E Wang. Anyway, it's very upbeat prose. It's fast reading. It's funny. This young woman is having an identity crisis in that she's pursuing her PhD in chemistry, and she has a very devoted boyfriend who's also pursuing his PhD, and she walks away from both, essentially. But what's at the heart of it also is that she is a child of Chinese immigrant parents. So, of course, you know, they want their daughter to accomplish everything, and they want her to be a robot, and on and on. There's not a lot that happens in here. What's fun about the book is that it's under 200 pages, and she writes in, it's her voice that is just so light, and you turn the pages quickly. And also she weaves in information about chemistry and how the world works and all this kind of stuff. And you don't really, it's kind of like eating a bag of potato chips, really.
I'm hip.
It's one of those books that if you have read a heavy dystopian novel and you want to lighten things up, you pick up this book, Chemistry. I think that really at the heart of it is the story is about rebelling and why is it that her parents have so much power over her. And she watches this cooking show and she sees this one woman who has rebelled against everything that she's supposed to do. And she's pursuing her cooking, her chef degree and all of this. And she's wondering, why can't I, do that too. It's upbeat in that she's able to look at her life in a way that's not too serious. So again, it's a new author. It's this book. I picked it up because a lot of media outlets were saying this is a book to watch for the month of May.
Did you know the writer? Is it her debut?
It's her debut. And it's just called Chemistry. And again, it's just fun to read. It's a bag of potato chips.
Okay.
It's an interesting identity crisis novel.
I wanted to ask Mark Maxwell, and I'll ask each of you. You can think about it, but Mark Maxwell, recommend for me a funny book, a laugh out loud. What's one of your favorite funny books?
I didn't bring this with me today, but when I'm asked for that specifically, I like to recommend. There's an author called Mark Lehner, who was most popular for a minute in the mid-90s. David Foster Wallace was afraid of this guy. Like he talked to his agent, like, what is Mark Lehner doing? How can I do that? Now, he's kind of faded away. He ended up writing books about, like, popular books about medicine and stuff. But he's got a couple of early novels that are hysterical. There's one called I Smell Esther Williams. There's another book called My Cousin, My Gastroenterologist. He's a postmodernist writer. Lots of...
I asked.
you did.
I asked if you don't know.
He will make you laugh out loud. There's no doubt about it. Unfortunately, he only wrote like 3 or 4 novels and appears to have kind of given it up.
Almost afraid to ask what happened to him, but
he went on to write screenplays.
Yeah,
sure. And he writes, there's a book called Why Do Men Have Nipples, which is kind of funny answers to medical questions. And he wrote a whole series of those. But I kind of wish he would go back to writing novels because he was a stellar novelist.
I did not sit here on the radio and just say the word nipples. I just want everyone to know that.
It's a valid question.
Mark Lehner.
Yes.
All right. Well, I did write that down because I'm always in the market for some really funny books. And I read The Confederacy of Dunces every year. I never miss
me
it.
Too.
But. So, give me a quick pick. Give me a quick pick.
Well,
Robin Nesbitt.
So, if we want something light, there's lots of beach reads coming out, and Dorothea Benton Frank is one of the authors that's got great covers. I mean, if you want to pick up a book just because of a cover, it's usually got a lovely beach on it. I don't have it with me because they're all checked out right now.
Called
Same Beach Next Year. This is set in the Barrier Islands of South Carolina, and it's about former sweethearts. I love it. Adam and Eve meet on vacation. Too bad they're both married, and then they strike up a friendship and return every year. There's that. We've got a new Daniel Steele out this month, and I think there's a new Nora Roberts Come Sundowns out this month too. So lots of beach reads for folks looking for something a little lighter.
I'm reading one of the latest John Grishams.
Oh yeah, The Whisper.
What I love about Grisham is that his villains are so great. They're so hateful.
Yeah.
They're always drunken judges or corporate muckety mucks who really
are
bad people.
You can work out a lot of righteous indignation reading those things, right?
Yes, and I picture him at his computer just grinning and having the best time because he was he's another one. He hooks you. He puts you into the car with him half the time, Grisham. So I'm always appreciative of that. You can only read Dostoevsky so much. Give me a break.
Absolutely.
Not that we don't love Dostoevsky. Cassie Rose, what do you have for us? First of all, what's on your blog right now, thelongestchapter.com? What's on the blog?
I just wrote about a collection of essays. And, sometimes when I write about short stories or collections of essays, I think, nobody's going to be interested because they want the, fast reads or whatever. But I like to bring some of these books to the attention of people because this collection of essays called Somebody with a Little Hammer by Mary Gaitskill, whose last novel, Mare, did very well, M-A-R-E. I don't feel that I have to read all the essays. I just read the ones that are interesting to me. And she's fascinating because what she does is that she gets down to the core of truth of people. So one of the most fascinating essays in here is about Linda Lovelace, who was the star of that popular pornography flick, Deep Throat, 1972.
Some of us of a certain age remember mm-hmm. not that we ever saw it, but we remember hearing about it, yes.
Well, she gets...
If you, don't, ask your mother out there.
Well, there was, you know, common perceptions of her, and she wrote a tell-all autobiography called Ordeal about eight years later. Yeah. Some people saw her as a victim. Some people saw her as a liar. Mm. Well, Mary Gaitskell writes this great essay about, and she really sees at the heart of who this person is and what is going on there. She writes another essay is about a memoir about losing her cat, which she then turns into an essay about class and racism. So she really has this dynamic style that's very accessible. And if you like to read magazines, if you like to read newspaper columnists, that's basically what you're doing here with essays. You don't have to read the book from beginning to end. You just check it out from the library or buy it and just decide, like what I did. I went through and I think I read about 10 of the essays. And they give you something to think about and you feel like you've read a newspaper columnist, as I said. It's great to read in the morning with a cup of coffee or at night before you mm-hmm. go to bed. And anyway, that's what's on the blog right now, so you can read more about it there.
TheLongestChapter.com is your blog.
Thank you.
And Mark Maxwell, when you were here last, you were recommending Lincoln and the Bardo by George Saunders.
Oh, I still do.
Which I do, too. I read it since then. But I've also read his volume of short stories, The 10th of December, mm-hmm. Which I can't recommend that strongly enough.
Right?
Tell me about your take on George Saunders.
I love George Saunders, and I've been a fan for a long time. I would recommend that you go back and look at his earlier books of short stories, Pastor Civil War Land and Bad Decline. Those are the books that made his reputation. He's got an interesting history. He was actually trained as a geologist, and he came to writing fairly late in life. And in some way, I think that informs his writing. He would say that his writing style is based on the fact that he doesn't know what he's doing because he wasn't trained to be a writer.
Well, Lincoln and the Bardo was very original, I thought, because first of all, the premise. I mean, who would think of such a thing?
Who would?
You know, it's Abraham Lincoln goes to the cemetery to sit with the body of his deceased child and is visited by just about everybody, but they're all dead.
A chorus of ghosts,
but they're all dead, and they have – it's. But, you know, it sounds grisly. It's a very funny book.
Oh, it is, and all of his work is. It's serious funny.
Serious funny. That's very well said, yes. So I would recommend – and I thank you for the – you turned me on to George Saunders, and I do thank you for that.
You're quite welcome.
Give me another recommendation. Now, you're not always a funny guy, so – Let me
Thanks.
See what you have
I have there's a new book by Haruki Murakami, which is always cause for celebration. Murakami is a Japanese writer. He's become kind of an international rock star. He's sort of constantly on the short list for the Nobel Prize. This is a book of short stories called Men Without Women. That title comes from a Hemingway anthology of short stories from earlier in his career. It is a book of stories about men who are lonesome, men who have lost something in their lives. And one would think that would make it kind of a melancholy book, but it's really not. Murakami doesn't work that way. So Murakami's stories, his prose has a kind of forward momentum that doesn't allow for a kind of melancholy introspection. And he's not for everyone. I mean, there are some criticisms of Murakami that I think are valid. His work is a little shallow, you know. There's not necessarily a lot of depth there. But for me, a Murakami book, it's like going to see a Fred Astaire movie. You know, you don't think that you don't go to a Fred Astaire movie because he's going to go deeply into a character and find emotional depth there. You go to a Fred Astaire movie, and you should, because of the way he moves across the screen. Right. And you pick up a Haruki Murakami book because of the way his prose moves across the page.
So it's not a sad book then. I mean,
it's not a sad book.
He hooks you in with a sad, potentially sad title, and
right.
sort of
and there
dazzles
are,
you.
There are moments in here that are really funny. There's a story called Samsa in Love, which is kind of a pastiche of Kafka's Metamorphosis, in mm-hmm. which a young cockroach wakes up one morning to discover that he's become a human being named Gregor Samsa and has a hard time dealing with that.
That's great.
I also wanted to ask you, when people come into Half Price Books these days, are you noticing any pattern of what people are asking for?
Sure. We get a lot of questions about, you know, whatever happens to be the popular thing of the day. Graphic novels are increasingly big with us. Board games have been a big deal for us lately. We've started buying and selling board games, which is a really kind of fascinating side business for us. I mean, we're kind of branching out and doing a lot of different things. But for the most part, people come in looking for books. And for the most part, they're looking for whatever happens to be on the bestseller list at the moment.
You're listening to All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. My guests are Robin Nesbitt, who is the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. She comes to us with quick picks. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. And Mark Maxwell is a manager at Half Price Books. If you'd like to give us a recommendation or talk to our panel, it's as easy as calling 614-292-8513. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Robin Nesbitt, quick pick me again.
Okay. I don't have it with me because, again, it's checked out right now. But Paula Hawkins, who wrote Girl on the Train,
yes,
her new one just came out, Into the Water. It's getting mixed reviews from my understanding. And the basic premise is that women keep drowning in this small English town of Beckford. And this has been happening since 1679. So that's kind of the hook of the book.
You think you wouldn't, like, move there then.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But she, unlike Gillian Flynn, who we haven't seen. She's Gone Girl.
Yeah.
We haven't seen anything from her. But Paula came right out with something here quickly. So that one's been flying off the shelf. And then another quick pick in the nonfiction realm. So Sheryl Sandberg, who wrote the book Lean In, has written a book with a man named Adam Grant. And she wrote this as a result of her husband dying and trying to work through that. So this is called Option B, Facing Adversity, Building Resilience, and Finding Joy.
He died very suddenly. I think he was working out.
I think that's right.
He was a relatively young man.
Yeah. And it left her and her children, you know, basically bereft at the sudden death of a fairly young man. This book is not very long, but yeah, it's meant to be basically a guide to get you through the rough times in life. It's only about, after you take out the notes and acknowledgments, about 170 pages. So.
And that's a quick pick.
That is a quick pick. It just came out. Yeah,
how do you decide what is going to be a quick pick?
It's based on reserve lists, you know, so things that we see building where there's lots of interest. And then, like, Handmaid's Tale, you know, where there's some pop culture interest, where all of a sudden the TV shows out, you know, that kind of thing. So just kind of keeping our pulse on what's going on, what's popular right now.
Now, Cassie Rose, before we went on the air, you were singing a Lou Reed song for us, so I'm going to ask you to do it again.
Wasn't singing it. Mark was singing it.
Mark was singing
it.
Yes.
So...
But tell me about this book, Jesus Son, that you brought us.
This is, you know, when I head into the warmer months, I tend to read classics that I haven't picked up or that I've missed. And Jesus Son by Dennis Johnson is, I would say, is a classic. It's a collection of short stories. It's only 133 pages. And the title comes from a Lou Reed song called Heroine. This is Donald Ray Pollock country, and it is funny. I have to say, the stories, and the reason I wanted to read it is because authors love this book. He is dead on in the way that he can capture a moment and a situation. And he's writing about, yes, the drug culture and people living in rundown houses and that drink a lot and go to the pub and all this, but he normalizes it in a way that when we're reading about it, I mean, they are not having a problem with their life, so we get this window in on it. There's a story about how the narrator, he's going over to a guy's house and he wants to get some opiates, and the guy walks out of the house and he said, you know, I just killed McManus. He's not feeling very good. Or no, he didn't say he killed him. He said, McManus isn't feeling very good. He said, I just shot him. And he said, well, is he alive? And he goes, I didn't mean to do it. So then he goes in the house and there's the family sitting around. The guy's been shot in the stomach. He goes, well, have you taken him to the hospital? And I go, yeah, we put him in the car and then we drove him to the barn. So they're like, can we use your car? And he's like, yeah, but it doesn't have brakes. But, you know, we sit here reading it and thinking, oh, that's awful. But they're like, you know, it's their life.
It's what happens. Right.
And then so, you know, I was laughing about it. And, you know, at the end, there is some violence or whatever. And you're horrified by it. But you realize that this is sort of this window that you're watching this world of these insane people. That do this stuff.
They're not insane to them.
They're not. They're
this
not.
This is the way they live. This is it.
Right. Or another story. Two guys come out and there's this
Bleed on the kitchen floor. Get him out of here.
Exactly. Right? There's a guy in the back seat of a car and they just say, well, what are you doing here? And he doesn't talk, but he tells them where to go. And then they get to this place and they should feel afraid because these people are bad, but they feel stupid instead. Hmm. So I get why.
Who's the writer? Tell me about the writer a little bit. Dennis Johnson?
Dennis Johnson, I would be close to calling him almost a cult author. I think he's got some serious followers. And he wrote a book called Tree of Smoke about Vietnam that I think it won some awards, which is very, very good. Mm-hmm. So he's someone to look into if you're And that's all really I can say. I loved Tree of Smoke.
Now, you said that writers are very attracted. Other writers are attracted to this book. The title is Jesus' Son. You make it sound almost like it's funny.
Well,
in its way. In
it
its
is.
Way.
And I have to position it and say, I know Donald Ray Pollock. Many see his humor. I think he's a brilliant writer.
Absolutely.
But I struggle to see his humor. Mm. It's because it's too violent for me. This, I got the humor. While these people are, you know, they're into drugs and they're killing people and they're running cars into barns.
Because it's Tuesday and that's what you do on Tuesday.
That's what you do on Tuesday. And I'm also realizing it's giving me this viewpoint, like Pollock does, into a way of life. The writers love him. And in fact, there was a reading that was going on in New York City that authors were doing from this book because they love this book. And that's when I picked it up, is that he is... It's like he's the epitome of being able to capture moments, capture characters, capture in just a few words. And it is. It's spot on in a way that's hard to describe.
And the title comes from Lou Reed.
Yes. Yeah. A song called Heroin.
A song called Heroin. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break and come back in a moment with more of today's R-rated, if you will, All Sides Weekend Books. Don't go away. Back to today's especially chatty edition of All Sides Weekend Books. Mark Maxwell is here from Half Price Books. Cassie Rose is here, WOH's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Robin Nesbitt, not Robin Maxwell. I'm obsessed with you, Mark Maxwell.
It's okay.
Robin Nesbitt
is
here from the Columbus Library with Quick Picks. In the New York Times Book Review last week, there was a long review written by Stephen King about Paul Theroux's new novel, which I don't think he liked, but it was such a devastatingly funny and nasty review. I happen to notice that Mark Maxwell has brought with him a novel by Stephen King. So let's talk about Stephen King a little bit.
I did. One of the benefits of working in a bookstore is you get to see some old friends once in a while. And I was happy walking through the store today to realize that there was a new paperback edition of the book It by Stephen King, which I read probably 30 years ago. It came out the same year as The Handmaid's Tale. It is the quintessential long-form Stephen King novel. It's his East of Eden. So it's got every element that you associate with Stephen King. There's a group of outcast children that are in a small town in Maine fighting an ancient evil, which if you're going to travel to Maine, you should be aware that Stephen King teaches us that many small towns there are infested with ancient evil
for whatever reason. Thank you.
Yeah. You should be careful about that. It was the best-selling book of 1986. It stands kind of at the center of his career. If you're interested in Stephen King, I suggest that you start there. If you Google the word "it," this book and the movies that are made from it will come up. So as far as I know, Stephen King is the only person on the planet to own a pronoun.
Well, there's Cousin It from the Addams Family, which is before your time, which was a TV show. But no, you're right. This being a book show, yes, Stephen King's It.
Yeah.
Stephen King, he is like Grishy. They just keep hitting him out of the ballpark every year.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I mean, they just know what they're doing, and we eat it up because it's great reading.
Right.
It's terrific reading.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Cassie, you also have a book for us that you were talking about earlier, set in France. We're gonna switch gears a little bit. This one's a little bit heavier, a little bit maybe sadder. The End of Eddie. First of all, again, it's not a book or a writer that they're well known. So where did you find this? How did it come to you? And tell me about the book.
Actually, I first read about it in the Times Literary Supplement and was captivated by the story, as well as then finding out that it was a runaway bestseller in France and also had been translated or has been translated into 20 languages. And so it just came out here in the United States. It is called a novel, but it really is an autobiography. The End of Eddie is about a young it's about the story of a boy growing up in a small town in the countryside of France, and he's growing up gay. And this is a town that doesn't change. People don't accept difference. It's people don't move out of the town. The men are all macho. They're into wrestling and soccer, and they go to work at the factory out of high school. And the women get pregnant and stay home and work as sales clerks in the stores. So he struggles because he is born different. And one of the very moving things for me about the book was that how he said, I wanted to belong. He said, I don't know why I was different. I don't know why I walked with a swivel in my hips and why my arms and hands were always moving and gesturing. And I don't know why I had an effeminate way of talking. He said, when I was a kid, I thought, I don't get it, but this is the way I am. Mm-hmm. He tried to be like all the other boys, and he tried to date girls. He tried to get into games. And meanwhile, of course, he's having the heck beat out of him in the hallway. And he didn't want that to happened on the playground. So he found a corridor in the school, and these two bullies would come and beat him up there every day. And he would go there again so he could contain it so other people wouldn't see it. Now, this is it's a difficult read just because you have to watch what's happening to him. But he does rise up out of it. And because he is very, very good in theater, and he doesn't have to go to the local high school. So he gets into a boarding school that's nearby. And therein, he sees the world isn't like this town. He grew up thinking that that's what life was like in the town. And he goes to a school where everybody accepts who he is. It's no big deal. The world suddenly opened up to him. Now, the New York Times just did a review of this book, I think yesterday or the day before. And I thought it was interesting that the spin of the reviewer was that this is France's hillbilly elegy. And indeed,
really?
They said that the author—
Are they calling it that, actually?
No, but she pointed out that this author, Edward Lewis, did do a lot of writing and commentary similar to the author of
J.D. Vance,
yes.
Sure, yeah.
So the two of them were, in a way, paired up because the village that he grew up in was very, very right wing. Mm-hmm. And the poverty was very similar to Hillbilly Elegy. The lack of nutrition. I mean, this man's right now he's only 27, but Edward Lewis's father, I mean, the main nutrition was French fries.
There's no opportunity.
There is no opportunity.
No forward opportunity.
And no understanding that there is opportunity.
Right.
So
right.
That was his struggle to try and belong. He does it very well because he doesn't go on and on about it. It's a small book. It's very moving. And I would highly recommend it. I think it's a book that is necessary for people to read.
No, I wasn't clear. Is this a novel or not a novel?
Well, it is labeled The End of Eddie, a novel.
Okay.
But you read the book and the main character is Edward Belgul, which is means grim face, I think, in French. Eddie Belgul. Well, that was Edward Lewis's name. He changed it to Lewis. So I think my gut instinct is that they changed it to, they call it a novel, to protect him.
Write about what you know. Yeah.
Right. And I do remember reading that in France that some of the people from his village were outraged. So
really?
I think labeling it as a novel was just a maneuver to get a layer of protection in there.
Hopefully he's living in Paris or Marseille and
he's doing very well now.
He's doing very well now. Okay. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about a quick pick again.
Okay. Well, you mentioned John Grisham earlier. Scott Turow, who's another big legal thriller writer, has out with a new one called Testimony. He wrote 1L and he wrote Presumed Innocent. And he's not quite as prolific as Grisham. But I think that he's really a good writer. He's also been one of the authors that has spent a lot of time kind of fighting ebooks and stuff like that. He's really worried about writers' ability to make money and get published and that kind of thing. So this new one, though, is basically a lawyer is going to really happy prosecute the possible massacre of 400 Roma people in Bosnia in 2004. So. Not especially happy read. And I was thinking earlier when you mentioned funny reads, there's always Janet Ivanovich, Carl Hyacin, and Christopher Moore is a little lighter than Mark Lehner. So if people are looking for some funny reads and don't want to go down the
Mark Lehner. I don't know. Mark Lehner sounded pretty
read the funny.
I would suggest, especially Carl Hyacin.
He's great.
He's great. And then Christopher Moore is pretty funny too. So, So Scott Turow, Testimony's out this week, May 16th.
I'm curious to ask each of you in turn, if there's one book or even or one or two books that you read almost every year or you come back to on a regular basis and reread them. Mark Maxwell. Is there a book that you do that with?
Well, you talked about Confederacy of Dunces.
That's one of mine.
I don't want to talk about how many times I've read Confederacy of Dunces. Infinite Jest, not every year. Nobody has time for that.
I was going to say, how do you do that?
But I've read it 5 or 6 times. Wow. I mean, I just you get into it a little bit and then you sort of slide through it, you know. Yeah,
David Foster Wallace, that's right. How about you, Cassie Rose?
Well, my challenge is I don't have a lot of time to reread books. But what I am doing now and is trying to reread books that I read in the past. And right now I'm rereading Jack Kerouac's On the Road.
Wow.
And I was drawn to it because of having read The Minor Characters by Joyce Johnson, her memoir, which she was the girlfriend of Jack Kerouac and when On the Road came out. And I loved that memoir. It was just and I couldn't put it down. And it is was a perfect transition for me to then pick up On the Road. So and I read it and I had my old paperback copy. But they have the new original version that he wrote because they edited it with the version that came out in the 1950s, which I have. And I thought, well, no, I'm going to read this, the one that he actually wrote.
I didn't realize that what was published first was edited. Was
yeah, the very first line, it says, when Dean whatever. Well, the book is, when Neil Cassidy.
Okay.
So I think that they just changed some names to, you know, protect
waiting
the innocent,
for people
as they
to
say.
Die here,
yes.
So we can.
Right, okay. Anyway, I'm loving it, On the Road. And I know someone, she had told me she reads it, she's read it 5 times. And I'm like, curious to find out what is it about this book that this one person reads every year. But I'm loving it. And I didn't love it when I read it the first time. I think I was too young.
The first time I read it was not that long ago, and it did not seem dated to me at all. I mean, some of the references were 50 or 60 years old, but I am old. So, I mean, I got some of it, but really the whole ethos of it seemed pretty fresh still. So I enjoyed that as well. How about you, Robin?
It's funny. I reread as a kid, and so I don't really reread because I've done this little thing where I figured out how long I think I'm going to live and how many books I read on average. So I've only got about 3,000 books left before I go 6 feet under. So the book, though, that I've read the most in my life is Harriet the Spy by Louise Fitzhugh. Everybody that knows
that
me, I make them read it if they haven't read it.
Oh, that's
so
terrific.
Yeah,
yeah,
I love that book. Mm-hmm.
All right.
My absolute fave, yep.
Well, now that I have to go home and get out my Confederacy of Dunces copy, because I think I'm due. By the way, if you've never out there read John Kennedy Toole's book, Confederacy of Dunces, do it, because you'll die laughing if you pass away while you're reading
it. Yeah, and a great story behind a book. So get an edition with an introduction by Walker Percy.
Yes, absolutely. That's right. Your turn. You're up, Mark Maxwell.
I brought a book that's out this week called Chuck Klosterman X. It is Chuck Klosterman's 10th book. Klosterman is an essayist. He writes about pop culture. He originally came into prominence. I think of him as kind of the last of the great rock writers. You know, he came up writing for Spin and Rolling Stone along the lines of somebody like Cameron Crowe, writing very seriously about subjects that nobody takes seriously. Since then, he's gone into sports. He writes about pop culture. I think he stands out now, not because nobody writes about pop culture, but because now everybody writes about pop culture. There's a million websites. Every stupid thing that happens, you know, somebody's got to come at it from 10 different angles. So now when somebody like Chuck Klosterman comes out with a new book and shows us that it's possible to be really, really good at writing about pop culture, I think we should all pay attention to that.
What specifically are some of the things he's writing about that would resonate to some of us?
There's a lot of essays here on music. So there's a long discussion of Taylor Swift. There are two paragraphs about whether it's fair to describe Taylor Swift as calculating, which is sort of classic Chuck Klosterman. There are interviews with a few musicians like Jimmy Page and Eddie Van Halen. There's some stuff about sports, which is sadly of lesser interest to me. There are some general pop culture essays. There's a beautiful essay about Charlie Brown. There's an essay about the zombie phenomenon, which is surprisingly penetrating on the subject. He casts a wide net, Chuck Klosterman does.
And we're going to segue from On the Road to Sirens. Mm. Cassie Rose, what is Sirens? I mean, I know what they are, sort of. I mean, but just non-adverb. But go ahead.
Actually, and since the last show, this is one of my very favorite books. I couldn't put it down. And I was reading it on the beach. I took a trip to Florida. It's by Joseph Knox. And it is a British a detective novel. It's about a young detective who is undercover trying to flesh out this drug lord named Zane Carver. Zane Carver is like a Gatsby-esque kind of guy who is throws large parties and has beautiful women there. Well, it takes a turn when a British MP, powerful man, comes to this young detective and says, my daughter is working with Zane Carver and I need you to watch out for her. He said, I don't want you to take her away because she's suicidal, so just watch out. It seems like a basic story, but what Joseph Knox does so brilliantly is he layers in complexities, which are police that are in the back pocket of this drug lord, the superintendent who the detective doesn't know if he can trust, and then he learns the girl is very afraid. She ran away from home, and so he suspects the father. And it just goes really fast. And even I realized when I was three quarters of the way through it, I realized even though I couldn't say all of the incidents that had happened that led to that moment because it's so complex, I got it. I was still on par with it. And so he keeps you well, and that's a talent, I think, in complex thrillers, because you have to keep the person on the level with you while you're spinning a lot of narrative plates. Well, it ends surprisingly. It's very satisfying, and there is a caveat about it, though, and that is that it's not yet out in the United States, but I know where you can get it in the United States. It is for sale at the Mysterious Bookshop in New York. They have a great website, and if you are a mystery thriller fan, I would recommend that you follow their weekly website, or their weekly newsletter that comes out, because it's like you're walking through their store and they're showcasing their new books. This is coming out, I think, in January of next year in the United States. But if you do want to read it now, you can get it at that bookstore.
Sirens by Joseph Knox. Mm-hmm. We have an email from Kelly who asks if any of you can recommend books that may assist transgender youth and young adults.
Wow. There's a lot of stuff coming out in that area. No titles spring to my mind immediately. I don't have my handy-dandy computer in front of me, but that is a field – that's an area of literature that's picking up, and I know we're seeing some new stuff in that arena.
One thing I would recommend to Kelly, of course, is just to go on the Columbus Library's online catalog.
Yep, or call 614-645-2 ask. Go on the catalog or go into one of our branches.
645-ASK, right?
645-ASK.
Yep. Yes, go on the online catalog and just type in on the subject line.
Yeah,
transgender
there's some
use,
really great stuff
come
coming
up there.
Out.
But that, I'm glad that's an interesting question. We maybe think about a show about a topic like that in the future, because I know there's a great deal of renewed interest in that material. In the few minutes we have left, I wanted to ask each of you if there's any buzz about books coming out that haven't been put in your hands yet, but that are in the pipeline that you're curious about or looking forward to?
I can't think of one right off the top of my head. We've got Summer Reading Club coming up on June 3rd.
I want to make sure that
people are aware of that. So that starts the first Saturday in June. It's going to be an all-online experience this year. So if you're one of those people who constantly loses the paper or you say, I don't have time to get into the library, you can sign up online. You go to our website. The information will be there on June 3rd. And prizes, people say, well, how old do you have to be? And I say 0 to 99. It is for all ages. So it is not just for 10-year-olds. It is not just for, teens, but babies and adults.
Now, I'm a Luddite, so is it going to be conducted entirely online, or are people going to actually go to the library? How's that?
Well, you go to the library to collect your prizes, and we would like you to come to the library to actually get your books, too.
Right,
but
yes.
If not, you can do most of it online, too.
Okay, so, that's the summary. Yeah. How's the Speaking Bureau? You have authors coming
we
in
We do.
Now.
We have an author coming on June 18th, Dan Sean. Ill Will is his novel he'll be talking about.
It's a terrific book.
Yeah, and he's an Ohio native, I understand.
Yes.
June 18th.
And Cassie Rose, June 27th, remind us.
Gramercy. Yes, June 27th at Gramercy. And there is, if you go onto my blog, The Longest Chapter, you can see on the right-hand side, there's a little blurb about it and a link to the Gramercy events page. It's a discussion that I will lead about Elizabeth Strout's new book, Anything is Possible, and I would love everyone to come.
It's a lovely space. Yeah, you're a great speaker, and it's a good book. You're going to get a big crowd for that.
Thank you.
Mark Maxwell, where are you dazzling us?
Well, we've got our 20% off sale coming up next week, and we're gearing up for our annual clearance sale blowout.
Yeah,
This is going to be our fourth annual one. We have it on in the Ohio State Fair in the Lausche Building. Right. We're going to have hundreds of thousands of books for $2 or
when
less. It's going to be
that?
A big deal. It's the last full weekend of June.
Oh, I can't wait for that. That's always
great.
Yeah,
visit our stores. We've got flyers and stuff, but that's going to be a big deal.
I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend Books. We've had a great time today with Mark Maxwell, who's a manager at Half Price Books, with Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. You can see and be in a discussion with Cassie on June 27th at Gramercy Books. And Robin Nesbitt is the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. She brings us quick picks and more. And her online reading club is June 30th?
June 3rd.
June
Starts
3rd.
June 3rd.
June 3rd, next week. So go to the library website, columbuslibrary.org, and check that out. I'm Christopher Purdy. The All Sides staff includes producer Michael DeBonis. Thank you, assistant producer Shyla Knott. Our interns are Kelly Rudolph, Kyle McKinnon, Aaron Kinkley, and Owen Darty, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. I thank you all very much for listening to today's All Sides Weekend Books on 89.7 NPR News.